Hey everybody, it's Eric Clark again from Alpha Brands. Just getting through our portfolio and the review of our holdings. This time is going to be fun for me because I love athletic apparel and athleisure as a thematic that is clearly global. And I'm going to talk about Nike and Lululemon. We did have Deckers Outdoors, which is the owner of Hoka. That's the primary driver of that brand. But we do not have that stock. It's been a monster performer and was getting a little expensive. So we concentrated the bet into more diversified strategies, but still love Deckers. Think the Hoka brand has enormous growth ahead, taking share from Nike and Under Armour and lots of other places. But today, it's Thursday, November 9th, about 2 o'clock on the West Coast. Just going to talk a little bit about the 800 pound gorillas. And let's talk Nike first. The company went public December of 1980. So been a public company for a very long time and been a monster performer. It's actually been a bit of a laggard over the last 5 years. We'll talk about a little bit why. But I mean, just for perspective, when you become the dominant brand or one of the fast growing brands in an important spending category, if you're a public company, there's some pretty potent growth on a forward basis. So since the IPO, 98,500% or 17.4% annualized versus 2,500% return for the S&P or just about 10% annualized. So massive outperformance for Nike. And that's over 43 years. So if you think about it, I just look, you know, if you put $10,000 in Nike at their IPO, that would be worth $1.847 million today versus your $10,000 in the S&P 43 years later, that would have been $256,000. So the compounding over time with, you know, pretty regular outperformance really begins to pay dividends and add value to your portfolio and your retirement savings over time. So, you know, the company's about $162 billion market cap company, 1.2% dividend yield, $52 billion in revenues. So it's in a different part of its life cycle than some other companies, even Lulu. Nike is pretty much everywhere. You can't talk to anybody, I would imagine, anywhere in the world that doesn't know and or admire Nike. And so the growth profile of that business is obviously a lot different. It's more of a steady eddy, stable, predictable most of the time. COVID was a bit of an anomaly. And in some ways, this is a margin story. Margins are coming back to pre-COVID levels after this wicked supply chain issue that the entire industry was dealing with and having so much excess inventory, which caused more discounting, which caused margins to fall, et cetera. As those things normalize, we see really big things for Nike, just on a mean reversion, getting back to quote normal. I do worry a little bit about China. You know, there's some nationalism and anti-Western sentiment happening in China. That certainly could be a part of Nike's slowdown in China. But the most recent quarter, they had some pretty good growth in China as well as Asia, as did Lulu. So there is still some pretty high brand love for Nike in China, even if, you know, it's not as cool and hip to be pro America as it was pre Xi in China. You know, he's not done that country any good chasing all kinds of brands and companies and supply chains out of the country and turning sentiment away from the West. Ultimately, that's a bad thing. Foreign direct inflows into China are now negative. So companies around the world are very cautious about investing in China. So, you know, there is certainly a, let's call it a black swan or a long tail risk that China turns its back a little bit more on Western brands. So, you know, that would be an Apple, that would be a Nike, a Starbucks, you know, maybe some luxury goods from Europe. But long story short, still a killer brand, great margin recovery story. Still think there's at least 40% upside in the name. In the most recent quarter, and the next one will be next month in December, $12.9 billion in revenue, 5.4% of that is direct-to-consumer. This has definitely been, you know, a few years ago, they essentially said, there are a bunch of wholesale partners that aren't adding any value to our brand. So they fired a ton of those partners and tried to focus in on the retail brands that really highlight the Nike brand and offering, as well as really putting a lot of effort into the direct-to-consumer offering. Because the reality is, if everyone knows Nike, then when we decide we want something, we can just go on Nike.com or some of the other online sites just to order and have it delivered and never go into a wholesale partner's retail store. And in many cases, the shopping experience is much more pleasant. So, you know, gross margins on the business, 44%. It is 68% footwear versus apparel and equipment. So certainly different from Lulu. Lulu is almost entirely apparel and accessories. And so they are the footwear dominant brand. Digital connections and direct are a big growth engine. And, you know, just looking at kind of the revenue mix, obviously Air Jordan, if you've seen that Air Jordan movie with Matt Damon, was an exceptional story. And, you know, Jordan's still making, I think it was $1 billion a year just in revenue from Air Jordan. That's a pretty amazing. And Nike makes a lot of money off of that. Converse is about a $2.4 billion a year business. So that's, you know, nothing to sneeze at. Inventories were way out of whack and are now normalizing. They're minus 10% year over year. Still some work to do there. That'll help margins get a little bit more stable. From a dividend perspective, they don't pay a big dividend, but 21 consecutive years of raising the dividend. So another good dividend aristocrat name. So you get a pay raise every year on your dividend. They have about $7 billion left of an $18 billion buyback. So it's some good buyback. And when that one's pretty much gone, they'll reinstitute a new buyback. So long story short, we think this is a bit of a mean reversion play. Also, it's been a little bit of a laggard for, you know, over the last 3 years because of supply chain disruptions. And, you know, I think this thing, it's 107 today. I think the thing can eventually get back to 160. So the chart is, I think, pretty attractive, well off the highs. The high was 179 in November of 21. So you're well off the highs as the business is inflecting and getting better. So let's talk about Lulu. You know, Lulu gets a bigger premium on a multiple because the growth is much better, much smaller business with much better growth prospects. So, you know, doing the same thing I did for Nike, the IPO was about July of 2007. Since then, the stock is 2,830% versus 316% on the S&P 500. So 23% annualized versus about 9, well over double the return as the S&P 500. So a lot of great brands in important spending categories that are the leading brand that have global aspirations and opportunities to delight kids all the way up to older adults, male, female, and around the world. That's a pretty good setup for great returns over time. And you just have to absorb some of the volatility. It happens. So, you know, when these things get beat up for whatever reason, we take a look to see if the business is still relevant and the management team is still doing what they're supposed to be doing and still, you know, focused on growth and profitability. If so, we get a chance to buy more cheaper. And it's worked, you know, really well as for me, almost 30 years as an investor. So much smaller business, $51 billion in market cap, about $9 billion or so in revenues. So, you know, a fraction. I mean, there's a massive amount of growth that Lulu still has, primarily international, with their what they call the power of three times two. And that's they just want to double the business from 2021 with $6.25 billion in revenue to $12.5 billion, well on their way to doing that. And, you know, they do that through innovation, through guest experience, and through market expansion. They want to double the men's business, double the DTC, direct-to-consumer business, and then quadruple quadruple the international business. And again, that's where the real growth is. Even in the recent quarter, $2.2 billion in revenue, North America grew 11%, international grew 52%. So massive opportunities to grow, particularly in Asia. That's the big growth region because the brand still isn't as prevalent as Nike. So they're doing pretty well when most consumers around the world just don't either know Lulu or just getting to know Lululemon. And it's a primarily female-driven brand. And females drive the household budget. 85% of the household spend comes from female decisions. So they love Lulu. And, you know, I generally don't, the Lulu menswear doesn't really fit me particularly well. So I don't have much exposure there. But if you look at my daughter and my wife, there's probably 30 SKUs of Lulu and 25 SKUs of Nike in our house. And we get new sneakers probably every 4 months or so. So we're certainly contributing to the consumer love and the brand love of this business. Gross margins are 58%, so a little bit more than Nike, particularly because they're more of a high-end apparel with higher price points, and they don't discount nearly as much as Nike. But you know, there is a strong local presence in upscale neighborhoods wherever they put their stores. 672 stores as of now all over the world, growing fast in Asia, as I said. Last quarter, they opened 9 new stores in Asia, 1 in Europe. So you got about $500 million or so in operating income, $1.1 billion in cash with a small buyback. They're in growth mode, so I don't really want them to be big buybackers of stock unless a thing gets really beat up. And then they have a history of being fairly aggressive when the stock gets beat up to buy back stock because they generate some good free cash flow and they have good cash balance. They have written off pretty much the whole mirror experiment that they purchased for $500 million through COVID in the lockdowns. We still, you know, our family still loves the mirror. They recently did a deal with Peloton that's just from an apparel and a sharing of basically Peloton's taking over the mirror app for consumers. And it's going to be interesting. This could be hey, let's try this to see if we get some traction and we'll produce all of the Peloton apparel. And if we really start to get some user adoption, maybe this ends up being, you know, Peloton being part of Lulu. Who knows? Anything's possible there. Peloton's still a very strong brand, but it's very niche. And they have had some serious, the stock's down like 95% from the highs because of a lot of misallocations of capital and really bad decisions by management team. So anyway, between the two of them, I would say they're both very high brand love. Lulu has probably higher pricing power than Nike because they kind of play in a higher end. I kind of think a lot of the apparel that Lulu does, particularly for women, is more impressive. My wife certainly agrees than the stuff that Nike does. Nike's much more mass market, obviously, with $50 billion in revenues. There's a lot of mass market products as well, and they cover a heck of a lot more categories within this, the apparel and the footwear and equipment spend. So both of them have terrific growth profiles long-term. They're just different. Lulu has a lot of actual top line revenue growth and store growth to come. And Nike is probably more saturated from a top line, but has some more efficiency gains that lie ahead, both of which can drive the stock prices higher. I might even say that because of this mean reversion in Nike might even have more upside over the next year or two. But we'll see. You know, that's a bit of a toss up. I'll let the market decide that. But we love the athleisure apparel and lifestyle apparel thematic. It certainly skews younger. And if you think about it from a demographic perspective, there are more millennials than baby boomers. There are more Gen Z than baby boomers. And I forget the name of the new the young kind of, you know, my daughter's 13 and she's in the Gen A. I forget the the Gen Alpha or something like that. And there's that's a big generation too. So both of these brands are heavily loved by millennials and lower from an age perspective. And so they have a lot of growth looking forward because athleisure is a part of everyday life and that's not going to change. And the more we work from home, at least part of the week, the more we're going to be in need of maybe some athleisure clothes, because that tends to be what people wear. So all in all, I think we have some great trends. I'll just technically, let's look at the Lulu stock. You know, it was as high as 485 in November of 22. It's 406 currently at the top end of the range. I would say that I would love to buy the stock maybe down around 370. So I haven't added to it lately. In fact, we trimmed it not too long ago. But, you know, long story short, if you widen your lens for 10 years, the thing still looks like it's going to push up to new highs, maybe up to 475, and it's 406. So plenty of growth ahead in the name. And when it goes on sale, you just go out and you buy it. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.